Brazil has been one of the countries hit the hardest by the COVID pandemic. And recently, Jair Bolsonaro's government has backed measures to ease economic hardships for its citizens. This included a 50% increase in welfare payments for Brazil's poorest. But these payments will only continue until the end of the year, a move that several have blasted as a cynical and opportunistic electoral ploy. So what's the cost of having a right-wing leader versus a left-wing leader like Lula da Silva for Brazilians? And regardless of who is in power, what will this mean to the Brazilian economy? We'll be diving into these topics and more. I'm Christy Ai, and you're watching The Cost of Everything. Bolsonaro and Lula have both played their part in shaping Brazil's political landscape. Both men have built up a group of loyal supporters who believe that their way is the correct and right way for Brazil's future. Over the last 4 years, Jair Bolsonaro has risen to power by drawing on the rising discontent with the Workers' Party government, which had been in power since 2003 and stood accused of grand corruption. Bolsonaro, who was a longtime member of Congress and defender of military prerogatives, portrayed himself as a political outsider with conservative values. His rise was as much a condemnation of previous left-leaning governments as a victory for conservatism in Brazil. Under his rule, he questioned the role of the Supreme Court and approved policies that have devastated the Amazon rainforest. However, loyalty to his right government remained unconditional among a base drawing heavily among the police, the armed forces, big businesses, and rural landowners. These landowners supported Bolsonaro because of his opposition to the Workers' Party's proposal for land reform and land redistribution. Lula, on the other hand, has ruled from 2003 to 2010 after winning 2 4-year terms in office and helped to lift citizens out of poverty. He reduced deforestation by over 70% and pumped billions of dollars into social programs to help Brazil's problems with inequalities. He increased minimum wages, established a family grant program that helped millions of families. However, under Lula, business leaders argued that Brazil just lost its competitive edge against international rivals. This actually made Lula very popular. However, his success was marred by controversy, as he was slapped with corruption charges that originate from a money laundering investigation known as Operation Car Wash. He was found guilty in 2017 and not allowed to run for re-election in 2018. But the tide soon turned again as Brazil's Supreme Court overturned the conviction, citing technicalities. Well, we all know what that means. These technicalities cited that Lula's right to a fair trial had been compromised by a biased judge. So what is at stake here, and what does this mean for the future of Brazil? And to help us break it down further on how the cost of Lula da Silva and Jair Bolsonaro's economic plans have affected Brazilians is William Meinster, professor of social movement and leader and local coordinator of Lula da Silva's campaign, and Fabio Zanini, journalist and politics editor of Folha de São Paulo and author of Euphoria and Failure of Great Brazil, both of them joining us from São Paulo, Brazil. Fabio, what's the current status of Brazil's economy? Can we compare economies during Lula da Silva's administration versus Jair Bolsonaro's government?
Well, when Lula was president from 2003 to 2010, it was a period of strong growth in Brazil. Lula enjoyed a very favorable and positive international environment. The price of commodities, which are the bulk of Brazil's exports, like iron ore, soybeans, but others as well, corn, and was very high at the time, oil as well. Lula benefited from this bonanza, so to speak. Bolsonaro is president during a much more challenging period. We've had the pandemic, of course. Now there's the war in Ukraine. So Bolsonaro's period in power had a smaller rate of growth than Lula's. So Lula's campaigning on trying to come back to the good old times of his first government. Actually, he was president twice. He was reelected, so two governments of Lula. And the campaigning on Brazil will be a happy country again. People will have food on their table. We have even money for a small barbecue on weekends and so on. And Bolsonaro has been affected by high inflation and low growth, which is part of a global phenomenon. And Bolsonaro uses this element as sort of an excuse for what's been going on in Brazil. But Bolsonaro's government has also been affected by his very poor response to the pandemic. Brazil had issues buying vaccines, for example, and so the economy was affected by this the government's response to the pandemic. Brazil recovered a bit later than was predicted, but more recently, President Bolsonaro has managed to approve in Congress a few social benefits, a several measures in Congress that are putting more money into the mouths of Brazilians. He's also put pressure on states to reduce tax on fuel, for example. So inflation is coming down a little bit because the price of fuel, of gasoline, is coming down. But in spite of these slight improvements in the economic outlook of Brazil in the last few months, the situation is still not very good. So Bolsonaro is being affected a lot by the economic issue, and especially when Lula compares the situation we have today in Brazil to the situation we had when he was the president.
The country is very big, obviously, and there are substantial financial costs associated with each election cycle. So what are some of these costs, and who is ultimately responsible for bearing these costs?
Very, very straight here, because Brazil opted for the public funding to the elections in the last years, the last elections. We historically had rich candidates always in advantage in the elections, and now it seems to be reduced. You can see it in the streets. You can see, for example, people candidates with good opportunities in these elections because of the equality that public funding brings to this election. This is the answer.
William Meister and Fabio Zanini, thank you so much for coming on today from Sao Paulo, Brazil. And after the break, Brazil's polarizing topics such as abortion rights, taxes, religion, and gun ownership have been quantified. The costs of the new gun laws in Brazil can be counted in dollars. We have another great panel of guests when we come back.
November 22, 2022. Outraged Orthodox Christians confronted Ukrainian security service officers, blocking entrances and exits to Kyiv's oldest monastery. They were looking for alleged Russian spies among the monks.
We имеем дело с именно с религиозной войной.
The former reason for the brutal crackdown, one church's parishioners had sung a song about Russia. It's long been reason enough to condemn any Orthodox Christian, attack, imprison, and even kill them.
Наши враги, наши оппоненты прекрасно понимают, что не уничтожив православие, они не уничтожат Россию.
Есть места, которые соединяют землю с небом, а есть места, где соединение идет с адом.
Some nations may be able to turn a blind eye to atrocities in other countries. The United States of America is different. Wherever people long to be free, they will find a friend in the United States.
We came here peacefully. We are asking our minimum basic rights in this country as a human being.
Dietro la primavera araba e le varie rivolte nei vari paesi si sono inseriti i giochi delle grandi potenze, dei servizi segreti.
Color revolutions is one among several means to reach the goal of conquering foreign lands and bringing them under the helm of US Western economic interests.
Si può pensare ad un'architettura globale di democrazia.
Le rivoluzioni colorate sono un tassello del soft power americano.
The final goal of these theme revolutions is to ensure that there are no independent players in the world anymore.
There are many polarizing topics in politics these days. Abortion rights, taxes, religion, and gun ownership. They are universal no matter which country you go to. So let's take a closer look at Brazil's changing stance on gun ownership. In 2018, the year before Jair Bolsonaro became president, Brazil had one of the highest homicide rates among the developed countries, 27.8 per 100,000 people. This compared with the 5 per 100,000 in the US and the 0.5 per 100,000 in China in 2018. Bolsonaro decided that guns will help to defend people as an equalizer. Brazil had since added more than 400,000 licensed firearm owners, and these owners had to undergo psychological and technical aptitude screening, show proof of employment, and explain why they want a firearm as a prerequisite. So now, the big question is, with the population of firearm owners more than doubling, did violence increase or decrease? Instead of surging, crime declined sharply in Brazil. In 3 years under Bolsonaro, the homicide rate has fallen 34% to 18.5 per 100,000. That's a pretty impressive figure already, but it actually gets better. Homicide costs society a lot. The impact is psychological and economic, and it starts with the detectives on the street, trauma surgeons at the hospital, the economic loss of the victim from production, and not to mention tourism dollars lost as certain places become deemed unsafe. One study that attempted to quantify this estimates the average economic cost of each homicide to be $17.2 million. Let's bring in Dr. Kristen Smith, professor of African and African diaspora studies at the University of Texas, and Fabio Zanini, politics editor of Folha de Sao Paulo and author of Euphoria and Failure of Great Brazil. So, Kristen, we just talked about the cost of homicide on society and how that figure has been greatly reduced after Bolsonaro changed the gun ownership laws. What are the other costs associated with this change, such as the firearm exporters who are now taking advantage of this increase in market share?
I mean, I think it's important to recognize the conservative backdrop to this decision. I think that Brazil has always had a policy of no private gun ownership. And so this is a huge social change when he implemented this particular new law. And I think that the aspects of it that are not readily apparent to people are the fears of vigilantism that are also now circulating widely because of this. And so I actually hesitate to associate the drop in the homicide rate with gun ownership. I don't think that's the connection there. I think that in actuality, there probably would have been a drop in the homicide rate anyways, simply because of the COVID-19 pandemic and other factors in the country. And so I think we have to really be careful to associate one with the other, but I do know that there's a general sense of fear among people, particularly working class folk and particularly people of color and particularly Black people in Brazil who really fear vigilantism and violence, particularly racially most motivated violence at their expense. And so that's one of the things that I think that people don't necessarily see there, and also not really understanding the class and race dimensions of gun ownership. And so most of the people who have been pleased with this decision have been white elite Brazilians. And that's something to keep in mind.
And Fabio, what is your take on the cost of changing gun ownership in Brazil?
Well, Bolsonaro's, one of his main policies during government has been trying to increase the legal framework for Brazilians to own guns and to carry guns. He's a military man. He's a retired captain from the army, and he's supported by gun owners all around the country and military and former policemen and so on. The issue of guns has been very heavy on Bolsonaro's agenda, has always been very heavy since the days he was a congressman. He was a deputy for 28 years, and he had this platform of gun ownership. And he's tried to expand it very much. He hasn't been able to do everything that he wanted because some of his decrees and acts were deemed illegal by the Supreme Court and even by Congress. But he's managed to change some minor rules that in the end have resulted in more Brazilians having access to guns and more Brazilians have access to ammunition. At the same time, the levels of criminality, of homicides, especially homicides, have been coming down in Brazil for quite some time. Brazil's levels of criminality are not the best, of course, but they have been improving for the last few years. Bolsonaro's trying to link one thing to the other, which is, I think, and most pundits believe it's a bit of an exaggeration, because the fact that crime has been going on in Brazil owes to a lot of things. It's a demographical change. It's a socioeconomic change. It's a legislation change. But Bolsonaro has been trying to show a cause and effect relationship between giving more access to Brazilians to guns and this phenomenon. He's been repeating this in his campaign a lot, but I would say it's a bit premature to establish this link.
Turning back, Kristen, another big threat to Brazil's society is that posed by illegal mining. Organizations are now pushing for a crackdown on unregulated gold flows because now illegal mining impacts the sector's reputation. So what are the costs associated with these black market miners?
No, definitely. I think this is a huge issue. And I actually think it's important to put illegal mining together with other factors like the illegal seizure of land and climate change and deforestation, because all of them go hand in hand. I think that we have to remember that this illegal market around gold and mining is very much tied to a desire to disenfranchise Indigenous and Black people from their lands in Brazil. It is also partly what feeds and kind of foments a very Wild West approach to Northeastern politics and the political landscape there. And so a lot of the illegal mining should be associated with large landholding elites and corporate officials, not officials, but corporate, corporate stakeholders coming in and being able to exploit the environment in ways that don't have any accountability within the state structure. And I think that's one of the most unfortunate downsides of this. I think that there's always been illegal mining in Brazil.
Fabio, isn't illegal mining hurting Brazilians ultimately?
It is a huge cost. I wouldn't have a number here on top of my mind, but illegal mining is a huge problem in Brazil. And Bolsonaro has sympathy for these illegal miners. Most of these miners are mining in the Amazon, for example, indigenous lands, which is, of course, illegal. These illegal miners cause all sorts of deforestation, environmental problems, health issues towards the indigenous peoples, killings, and so on. Bolsonaro defends, Bolsonaro and his allies, especially in the agricultural sector, defend a change in the law. They are trying to change the law. There's actually a project, a bill in Congress to change the law in order to make it possible for miners and other economic activities to happen inside indigenous lands, for example. But there's huge opposition to this move by the indigenous, the environmentalists, left-wing parties and pundits and the universities and so on. So it's a big struggle.
And Kristen, another big issue here is deforestation in the rainforest, which is often referred to as the lungs of the earth. Deforestation has skyrocketed under Bolsonaro and was reported to have broken all records in the first 6 months of 2022. So what's your take on the issue and how are both candidates addressing this?
Yeah, I mean, I think deforestation is probably one of the most, it's hard to think about what are the most alarming after effects of this administration, but I think deforestation is definitely one of the most alarming. I think that I think it's important to remember that this is part of a general political plan to really destabilize Black and Indigenous communities who have ancestral lands in the North, particularly the Amazon region and the Northeast. And the push or the ways that Bolsonaro has allowed for deforestation have everything to do with his desire to really undo many of the advancements that have happened around environmental protections, but also around land rights. And I think that that's something that we can't ignore and we can't emphasize enough, that this is a multi-tiered issue. It's a multi-dimensional issue, and it has to do with the illegal logging in the Amazon region, but it also has to do with illegal farming in the Amazon region, particularly cattle raising and soy farming. And so these two industries have been at the root of a lot of the deforestation that's been happening up in that area, and have also been at the root of undermining the advancements that Indigenous and Black residents have had in laying claim to their ancestral lands. And so, you know, there's a way that all of these issues go together. And I think that one of the pitfalls to the conversation has been an attention to the environmental dimensions of this and not a lot of attention to the race and class dimensions of it. And the colonial dimensions of it. And I think you have to look at them all together because it's part of a broader violent and I would actually say kind of genocidal aspect of this administration that is undermining the Black and Indigenous population's ability to sustain itself. And that has a lot to do with not only, as we mentioned before, illegal mining, but also illegal damming, creating dams in places that devastate and flood out communities, basically deforestation, logging. All of these things are leading to devastating floods, the destabilization of the earth. And what do I mean by that? I mean landslides, all of these kind of environmental disasters that are happening in the northern and northeastern region and across the country that are related to deforestation, but we're particularly talking about the Amazon. All of these things that are happening are really part of a broader kind of systematic neglect that the Bolsonaro administration has engaged in. And not only just kind of a willful neglect, but also willfully incentivizing environmental degradation, which I think is just appalling and alarming and something that we should all be deeply, deeply concerned about.
Got a lot to unpack there. Thank you both, Dr. Kristen Smith and Fabio Zanini, for joining us today. Now, when it comes to Brazil's economy, there are winners and losers. This was the most polarized race in decades. Brazil's presidential elections come at a time when Latin America's new pink tide appears to be gathering pace. Left-of-center candidates have won elections in Mexico, Argentina, Bolivia, Peru, and Honduras in recent years. This new group of presidents place climate policies and gender issues at the forefront of their policies. So who will win when it's all said and done? Will it be the Brazilian economy? Will its people win? It's a close call, but it's a fact that the Brazilian economy is really starting to struggle now in the aftermath of the pandemic. Thanks for watching. I'm Christy I, and I'll see you next time on The Cost of Everything.